Chapter 13. The white fur of the beasts had been stained with blood, though I wasn't sure if it was theirs or not. The animals had been chained to a heavy, metal post driven into the ground, in the crack between two of the marble flagstones. One of the canines laid on its side and seemed to be struggling to breathe, while the other was on all fours and stared right at me as it emitted a low growl. I moved slowly, and I stopped just outside the range of the chain around the animals' necks as I avoided direct eye contact. Then I pulled off my backpack and took out a bag of jerky. I had no idea if these dog-like creatures were tame or could be tamed, but I could see how badly they'd been tortured by the goblins. There were a half dozen of them dead and partially dismembered on the ground. One was considerably larger than the rest, and I guessed that was a mother and the rest were her pups. Despite their size, there were several other indications the two dogs left alive were still pups. Their paws were still disproportionately large compared to their bodies, and their fur looked a little woolier than the biggest dog, which implied to me that it was still their puppy fur. Even so, the two that remained were almost as tall as my knee, and in a world where everything seemed to grow a little smaller, they stood out.
"What are you doing?"
I heard Amrila ask in a now silent tower chamber. The white-furred canine turned to look at the horned woman and started to growl louder. The poor guy seemed to feel threatened by the Zenkari woman and all the other soldiers in the chamber, even though all the goblins were dead. "Everyone, just be still," I said, since I was determined to help these wounded creatures. No sudden movements or sounds.
"Just shoot the poor wretches and—"
Amrila started to say, but I lifted a finger to my lips to signal for silence. I saw my Zenkari wife's nostrils flare with annoyance as I shushed her, but she folded her arms and didn't say anything further. I knew her sudden anger would be forgotten in a few minutes anyway, so I wasn't bothered by it. Then I looked back to the wolfhound-like canines in front of me and saw that the one on the ground had lifted its head to watch me. I reached into the bag of jerky and threw out two pieces to the dogs, and I waited as I crouched down and made myself look smaller. The dog who was on his feet ignored the jerky, but the other one stood and limped over to sniff at the cured meat before he wolfed it down. After a moment, the other dog glanced down at his jerky, up at me, and then back at the jerky. Finally, the canine quickly snapped up the jerky and moved back to sit next to the more wounded one as they both worked at the chewy meat. I nodded as I watched them, and then I stood and looked around at my soldiers. "Let's clear out these bodies and then rest here," I said. "Seems like a good spot once all these fucking goblins are out of here. Make sure to check the bodies for a key to these chains, too." As the soldiers started to clear out the small bodies, I threw a little more jerky at the weird dog-like creatures, and Scourge came up beside me to watch as the beasts ate it up.
"I knew they sounded like goms,"
the dark-skinned man said as he looked at the red-eared animals.
"They look a little worse for wear, though."
"Do you think they're wild?" I asked as I threw them two last bits of jerky. "I hate to leave them here in this condition."
"I have no idea," the Zenkari man shrugged. "But they can be tamed, and they make loyal companions. These ones seem a little old to start the process, but I'm assuming you're up to the challenge."
"Am I that easy to read?" I grinned as I looked at the magnificent dogs.
"Not exactly," Scourge snorted. "It's more that you're naturally good and an insufferable optimist. These are two wounded and mistreated creatures, so of course, I would guess you'll try to help them."
"They are beautiful animals," I replied, and I looked at the two white canines as they huddled together.
"Well," Scourge chuckled, "I'm sure they'll be once they're cleaned up and properly fed."
Then the sleek thief and I started to help the others clean the main chamber and set up camp. We carried the bodies of the goblins and the dead garms to the edge of the forest, and then we did our best to clean up a large patch of marble floor in the tower for ourselves.
"Shield, brother!"
Ezreal shouted as he came toward me.
"I think I found the keys you wanted."
"Nice work." I smiled as I took the small ring of keys from the silver-haired warrior. "There's a lot of keys on here. I wonder what they're all for." I walked back into the ruins and over to the center of the chamber, where the dogs were chained up. Growler, as I'd started to think of the less wounded canine, looked up at me and predictably began to growl softly. He didn't sound as serious about it as the first time, but he still made it clear that he didn't trust me quite yet. Amrila and Nilame had gone to look around the area and make sure there weren't any stray goblins hidden anywhere. Meanwhile, Chatteron and Cyneath started to gather enough wood for a campfire, and the rest of the soldiers began to prepare some food, so all would be ready when there was a fire to cook over.
Eddie!
I heard my wife's excited voice echo through the ruined tower.
Come here, I think we found something.
I tore myself away from the dogs and walked to the back part of the tower, where there was a small stairwell. I walked through the door and looked up at the busted-up staircase that only went up about 20 feet. Amrila and Nilame were at the bottom of the stairs, and I could see the horned woman crouched down behind the steps. What'd you find? I asked as I walked around the bottom of the staircase to get a look.
Sacks of coins,
the red-skinned woman said with a huge grin.
A few shiny baubles, and best of all, a locked chest.
Amrila caressed the chest as if it was a beloved pet as she smiled up at me. You should try some of these on it, I replied, and I grinned back at my greedy wife as I jingled the keys in my hand.
She was about to pick the lock.
Nilame laughed as I handed Amrila the key ring.
Lock-picking is fun.
The horned woman sighed in a content tone as she started to try the keys one by one.
But Eddie spoils me and I'm out of practice. It would probably take me an hour to get this rusty thing open.
The lock on the chest gave a satisfying click and the lid popped open a little. Then Amrila opened the chest with a slow movement so she could savor the anticipation, and she was not disappointed. The chest was filled with gold coins, a few gold chalices and plates, and jewelry. Hell yeah, I loved loot.
Oh, it's so pretty!
My wife squealed with delight. We should probably split it among everyone, I said as I kneeled down and gently put a hand on my Zinkari wife's shoulder, since everyone helped kill the goblins. Amrila pouted a little at the thought of having to share, and she looked into the chest and toyed with some of the coins. But since you found it, I conceded with a smile, I think it's fair that you get the first pick. Amrila smiled back at me and picked up a gold circlet with a large black stone set in its center. When the Zinkari woman tried it on, it fit perfectly and was clearly designed to accommodate someone with horns on their head. I assumed it had been made for another Zinkari, since they were supposed to be prevalent in the Twilight region. It kind of suited the strawberry blonde woman, and it brought out the lighter highlights in her shoulder-length hair.
You should have Chatteron look at your arm, Eddie.
Nilame commented next to me as she gently touched my arm.
His father is a talented healer, so he could probably patch you up.
I'd almost forgotten about the arrow wound, since it didn't really hurt that much, but when I looked at my torn sleeve, I could see a fair amount of blood had soaked the cloth. That's probably not a bad idea, I agreed. It seems to have stopped bleeding, but who knows what might have been on those arrowheads. I went back into the main chamber and found the bald archer. Bacoth had already had a fire lit, and a pot bubbled over the flames with some of the general's famous soldier's stew in it. Chatteron had me sit next to the campfire while he took a look at my arm. I slipped my arm out of the sleeve so the stoic archer could see the wound, and Chatteron started to gently prod the cut as he examined it closely.
It's a clean cut, the slim man said in a rich baritone. Doesn't seem too deep, but I think it would be best to open it up, clean it, and apply a poultice.
A poultice? I repeated the unfamiliar word. What's that? The bald elf looked at me, a little confused, as if he wasn't even sure where to start to answer that question.
It's a paste made from different herbs and reagents,
Chatteron replied with a raised eyebrow.
They're used for all sorts of things. Do they not use poultices here in the Twilight region?
It seemed like Chatteron actually believed the lie that I was some higher order of goblin from this deep, dark region. I started to open my mouth, unsure what I would say to explain my ignorance, when Scourge bailed me out.
Nope,
the Zinkari man with the gold-tipped horns interjected from where he lounged close by.
Frankly, I'm suspicious of the idea of grinding up a bunch of leaves and rubbing them in an open wound. Seems unhealthy.
Well, the bald elf laughed lightly, you wouldn't want to grind up just any old leaves. You have to know what you're doing, or you could make things worse for a patient. I just don't want this to get infected. Those goblins weren't the cleanest of their kind. No offense, shield brother.
None taken. I snorted as Chatteron confirmed my suspicions that he had bought the lie that I was a goblin. And do whatever you think is best. I trust you.
Trust is all well and good, Scourge said in a philosophical tone. Until your arm falls off from gangrene.
I promise your arm will be fine,
the slim archer replied as he smiled at the Zinkari man's joke. I watched Chatteron take a small mortar and pestle out of his bag, and then several little earthen jars filled with fragrant herbs. He ground up the contents from several pots and poured the powder he made into the small metal bowl. Then Chatteron poured a little water from a water skin into the bowl and set it on a rock he placed in the fire.
"That will boil for a minute or two, and then I'll let it cool,"
the archer explained. "Do you think you could do something for the Garms?" I asked as the bald archer ran his dagger through the flames of the fire to clean it.
"Maybe,"
the archer answered as he let the dagger cool and looked over at the two white dogs.
"But I don't know much about treating animals, and they seem a little on the wild side to me."
"A cut's a cut," I replied as I looked at the Garm that was the most wounded. "Would you be willing to try and patch him up with my help? I just hate the idea of leaving them in this condition. They seem like they're still puppies."
"Rather large pups,"
Chatteron said as he took hold of my arm and reopened the cut with one quick movement.
"Shit!"
I swore, and I sucked in air through my teeth as I felt the sudden sharp pain. "I'm not going to force you to if you don't want to, but it seems like they've been through so much already."
"I'll take a look at them,"
Chatteron agreed as he poured some water on my wound and then cleaned it with a fresh cloth.
"But it might be a good idea to ask a couple of others to help too. The bigger one seems like he would attack if he thinks you're going to hurt his brother."
Once the bald man applied the cooled poultice and bandaged up my arm, Bacoth's stew was ready, and the company ate together. I threw some scraps to the Garms to help build up their trust, and after we'd eaten, Bacoth and Nyla May agreed to help hold Growler while Chatteron and I tried to help the other Garm.
"You're going to try and bring them home, aren't you?"
Amrila teased as she watched me start to carefully move toward the two animals' chains.
"Maybe," I grinned, "but I have to get them to like me first."
"Just wait until Ibsith gets out of them,"
the horned woman laughed.
"She'll have them so fat and spoiled that they won't even remember a time when they were feral."
I kept a close eye on Growler as I moved in closer, with a chunk of meat left over from the stew in my hand. The two Garms huddled together, but I could hear Growler's uncertain grumble as I took another step closer. But I didn't try to get too close. I wanted the Garms to make that last move, so I stopped, crouched with the meat held out, and waited. Growler eyed me and took a hesitant step forward, but then he stopped.
"It's okay," I said in a soothing voice.
"All the bald little assholes are gone, and it's going to be okay now." As Growler took another step closer, I looked at the blood that was matted on his soft white fur. I couldn't see anywhere where he was cut, so it was possible the blood belonged to one of his goblin torturers. Good for him.
"Come on, Growler,"
I encouraged the Garm, and his scared brother watched from a couple feet back.
"It's okay."
"Oh, God,"
I heard Amrila playfully groan.
"He's already named them."
Growler took another step and was only inches from the cube of meat I had in my open hand. The young Garm sniffed the gravy-covered meat and then licked it right off my hand with his rough tongue. I pulled out a piece of jerky from my pack and held it out to him. And then I lowered myself onto one knee. Growler watched the jerky and clearly wanted to take it, but he still wasn't sold on the idea of me. After a long moment, he took the jerky and lay down right there to munch and chew on the tough bit of meat. I waited for him to finish, and then I reached out my hand to the Garm for him to sniff. Growler lifted his head and cocked it to one side. That wasn't an aggressive gesture at all, and I started to wonder how wild Growler and his brother actually were. I inched forward just a little, and the Garm got up to his feet. There was a heart-stopping moment when I thought I'd pushed it too far, but then Growler sniffed my hand. I took another chance and tried to scratch the side of his head as the white canine started to sniff up my arm. Growler froze for just a moment, but then he pushed his head against my hand.
"That's a good boy," I smiled.
"You guys can try to approach the other one. I've got this sweet guy." But as soon as Bacoth and Chatteron started to approach the wounded Garm that shivered a few feet away, Growler barked and tried to lunge at the warriors. I wrapped my arms around Growler and pulled him back, and then Nyla May grabbed his head and firmly closed his jaws with her strong hands. As we held Growler firmly in place, the other two warriors were able to pin the more timid Garm, and Chatteron started to clean up a wound on the Garm's side as Cannell jumped in to help hold the beast down. Anytime his brother yelped or whimpered, Growler would struggle all the harder, and the princess and I had a hard time keeping a hold of him. Soon enough, though, Growler settled into my arms and whimpered a little too. After it was clear we weren't there to hurt him, Growler even started to nuzzle against me.
"You can let go of his muzzle," I said to the dark-haired woman.
"Are you sure?"
Nyla May asked with a raised eyebrow. "Yeah," I nodded. "If we want him to trust us, we're going to have to trust him a little bit too."
Soon enough, Chatteron and the others were done, but the bald man looked at me with sad eyes.
I have some bad news. The archer sighed. None of his cuts are serious, and I have him all bandaged up, but I think he's lame in his back right leg.
Can you make him a splint or something? I asked as I stroked Growler's head and scratched him behind his ears.
I can, the slim man nodded. But that would only help if his leg is broken, and even then he would never run well. It could also be that something is out of joint. But I don't know how to tell. I think it would be kinder to put him out of his misery.
Fuck that. Is it possible someone in Torsbane would know how to heal him? I asked as I thought fast. They had some cattle there, surely that means someone would know how to look after him.
It's possible,
Nyla May replied as she looked at me.
That means we would have to carry the animal,
Aralor commented, which could slow us down through dangerous territory.
If Eddie wants to keep his garms, then we will carry them wherever is needed.
Amrila chimed in, and her tone was final.
They are only puppies, after all.
My wife's black eyes were a little softer as she gazed at the poor beasts, and I stifled a smile. I knew there was a warm heart full of maternal instincts under her thick red skin. I'll carry him myself, I said. They seem at least partially tame, and I feel it's wrong to just abandon them or kill them because they're inconvenient.
Then it's settled, Begoth replied. Have you given any thought to watch rotation, Shield Brother?
The General and I set up the watches, and then everyone settled in for the next few hours. I'd given myself a spot on the second watch, which seemed to be the soldier's least favorite, so I settled in with Growler and his brother and thought about a name for the lame garm. Amrila sat with me, and we fed the dogs some more of the scraps left over from dinner.
What about the Dread Pirate Robert from that movie?
Amrila suggested as she cradled the wounded dog in her lap. The horned woman always surprised me with how gentle and nurturing she could be when she wanted. I think that's perfect. I smiled as I petted Growler, who had settled in next to me. We can call him Dread for short.
My sweet Dread.
The red-skinned woman cooed at the bandaged garm.
If I didn't think you'd catch something, I would grind up some of those horrible goblins for your supper.
The next several hours were quiet, and once all the company was rested, we broke camp and got ready to move out. I got the key ring back from Amrila and found the one that unlocked the chains around Dread's neck. Growler whined as he watched me wrap his brother up in my cloak and tie the ends of my cloak around my neck like a sling. It was a little awkward, but I'd be able to slip it off easily if we ran into any trouble. Then I unlocked the chain around Growler's neck and watched to see what he would do. The garm looked at me for a moment, as if unsure what to do now, but then he darted away and out of the ruins. Well, shit. It had been nice while it lasted. I turned and started to lead the way out of the ruins, and all the soldiers followed. I was a little disappointed, but at least Growler would be free and could probably look after himself.
At least you still have the one, Skurd said as he fell in beside me. And you have the pleasure of knowing that wherever your Growler is, he's better off for having known you.
That's true, I grinned. Thanks, Scourge. The dark-skinned man smiled at me, and we continued on toward Karardu territory. Before we got very far, I heard a bark from behind me, and I turned to see Growler as he barreled down the forest path at us, with his long pink tongue flapping from his mouth. The young Garm ran past me, and I could almost swear there was a grin on his wolf-houndish face. Then, when he was a few yards ahead of us, Growler made a hairpin turn and ran back to us as the company laughed and shouted words of encouragement to the happy dog. This went on for almost a mile, until Growler finally settled down and fell into a canter beside me while he panted and grinned. Then we made our way out of the twilight region and into the tunnel that led us to the lands of the Karardu. By the time we found our way to the other side of the tunnels, Zuag the orc and some of his men waited for us on the other end, alerted to our presence by some unknown magic in the tunnels.
Eddie Hugh,
the big orc said in a neutral tone. Captain Zuag, I replied respectfully.
I assume you're back on the chief's business?
The captain asked as he looked at the Dolrath and the Zinkari with me. You assume right? I smiled as I did my best to be friendly. Is it okay with you if we pass through Torsbane? I was hoping there might be a healer in town who could look at this garm for me. Dread had hung his head outside of the crude sling I'd made for him, and Growler stood so close to my leg that he almost leaned against me. Zuag looked at them both and then to me before he sighed heavily.
Bolra is trained in the healing arts,
the big man growled.
You may ask her if you wish.
Thanks, I said as blandly as I could, even though my heart skipped a beat at the thought of seeing the beautiful orc woman again. I remembered from last time that Zueg had been very protective of his sister, especially around me. I thought it was a little weird, but I was a stranger in every meaning of the word. Hopefully the orc captain would warm up to me eventually, especially if we were going to run into each other like this from time to time. My company followed the Torsbane guard into the town, and Zueg motioned for us to stop in the square, like we had when Ekname led the way to Kedaran several days ago.
If you would be kind enough to wait here,
the orc captain said directly to me with stiff formality.
I'll find Bora and ask if she's free to help you with your animal.
Then Zueg walked toward the guardhouse with most of his guardsmen, but a few stayed behind to watch us.
If I had a brother that controlling,
Amrila said quietly,
I would have stabbed him while he slept.
I guess that's why you don't have any siblings,
Scourge smirked.
Maybe she did,
Bakoth added with an amused grin, but she stabbed them for being overbearing.
Oh, careful, Bakoth,
Amrila replied in a bantering tone.
Didn't that pretty shaman predict you would have several daughters?
I'm not overly worried about it,
the Mohawked warrior chuckled.
Us Dolrath are quite mad and allow our daughters to marry a husband they like. But then, maybe that's why we've so few stabbings at the encampment.
My friends and I all laughed together, and then I saw the raven-haired Bulra hurry out of the barracks with a concerned look on her lovely face as she walked toward us. Zueg was behind her, with an armful of bags and jars, and he looked pissed.
Uh-oh.